the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show. I'm Jen, and today on Signal Boost we have Mike Brooks, DJ, punk, owner of Epic Hair, and author of the Keiko series, Dark Run, Dark Sky, and the upcoming Dark Deeds. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks very much for having me.
Of course, it's my pleasure. So let's get right into us. Why don't you tell us about yourself and about the Keiko?
I'm British. You might have guessed that from the accent. Yeah, I'll start with the Keiko series, which is my, I like to call it grimy space opera. Well, it's kind of, I'm assuming that you're familiar with sort of Firefly.
Yes.
Yeah. Firefly was an inspiration, stuff like Blade Runner was an inspiration. I was sort of writing about spaceships and people in space, but it's not sort of Star Trek, shiny, white, clean, everything's fine unless the Klingons blow it up type stuff. It's dirty, it's grimy, stuff breaks, stuff goes wrong. Something's probably held together with a 25th century equivalent of duct tape. The thing I always say about it is I was watching a making of documentary of Blade Runner, and one of the crew saw the set for it for the first time and said, wow, the future is old. And that's the vibe I wanted to get from it. It's like, yeah, like 500 years in the future, there's still going to be stuff that's kicking around from 30 years before those people were there. There'll be old models of things, stuff that's wearing out. You know, it's not going to be all shiny and new. I really wanted to try and get that feel for it. And it's not a sort of Star Trek style utopian society either. There's still dividing lines between different cultures, and which means there's different rules and different laws. And the sort of galaxy split up into different, essentially different countries. Only they're countries that cover sort of different star systems and stuff. So there's space for people to move around and try and make money between the lines and between the laws, that sort of thing.
Right. So lead us through the series up to Dark Deeds without giving spoilers, hopefully, so that everyone can go buy the books and read them.
Oh yeah, spoilers. That's a weird thing I found. The difference between the cover blurb between US and UK, because UK cover blurb goes, here's an intriguing thing, now read the book to find out, whereas US cover blurb seems to go, here's the story, do you want to read it or not? It's like I'm oversimplifying a bit for effect, but it's very notable when you've seen the two, like the differences. So the first one in the series is Dark Run, which introduces you to the crew of a Keiko, which is a space freighter. A bunch of different people with backstories that they don't really talk about. That's sort of part of the rules of the thing, is you don't ask about people's past unless they volunteer the information. What becomes clear over the course of the book is that the captain, a guy called Ikabrov Drift, that's almost certainly not his real name, has an even more shady history than people might believe from his current employment as part-time bounty hunter, part-time smuggler / legitimate shipping captain, whatever he can do to make the work. And so his past comes back to haunt him, and the rest of the crew gets caught up in it as well when he gets blackmailed. And then the rest of the book is pretty much a struggle for them to keep their heads above water and try and stay alive, having been dragged into something that's much, much bigger than they're really capable of coping with. The second book, Dark Sky, is kind of a direct follow-on from that. They got out alive, or most of them did, and so they're going to take a nice, easy job that's not going to cause any trouble. You see, you're laughing already.
I can see where this is going. Yes.
Yeah, you know how this goes. Yeah, I'm just going to write a novel about a nice, easy job where there's no problems and nothing goes wrong. That'll be fine.
That sounds exciting. I would love one of those.
Just, you know, for variety's sake.
Right.
No, they end up on a mining planet, which has sort of very powerful hurricanes overhead. And so everything's underground. And so when one of these hurricanes strikes, a revolution kicks off and the crew gets separated and they end up on different sides and for different reasons end up helping different sides of the revolution without realizing it. So they have to come through that and find a way to get off a planet that's in the middle of a people on the street protesting, getting violent, angry against the regime. Sound familiar?
Yeah, it really does.
Mm, yeah, I sort of, because I wrote that in beginning of 2015, I guess.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And then sort of was seeing as oh yeah, it's coming out in summer 2017 in the United States. It's like, okay, that's it. There's like, guys.
Perfect. We'll make it timely, right?
Yeah. So that was interesting. So after that, now we're on to Dark Deeds, which is again a follow on from that, because essentially they were there to do a job. They didn't do the job. There were mitigating circumstances, but they didn't do the job. And, basically the guy they were meant to do the job for didn't really take too kindly to that. So, Dark Deeds is, it's kind of like a heist movie, only in space, and a book, not a movie. There are similarities, I promise. I was kind of going for something a bit like an Ocean's 11 type vibe, only not that level of ridiculous coincidences that need to all happen for it to work. But I was trying to sit down and think, okay, so this crew needs to come up with a large amount of money in a short amount of time to pay off somebody. How are we going to go about that? And so they decide to pull a heist as best they can. Well, there's a background story of because one of their crew is held hostage, but this member of the crew is Tamara Rourke, who's essentially the second in command on the ship, who is ferociously competent and is in no way going to sit around and just be a damsel in distress waiting to be rescued. So part of the book is the rest of the crew going, oh no, we need to get this money to organize the ransom. And the other half of the book is Tamara going, yeah, right. And causing chaos on her own, which was very fun to write. But yeah, so that's the series. That's so far. So yeah, Dark Deeds is coming out in a couple of weeks time, 14th November. And, hopefully, it'll go down well.
Yeah. So first question, because you mentioned that this is sort of space opera in the Firefly vein. And to me, as a big fan of Dark Matter, it sounds similar to that as well, which is, you know, sort of ragtag crew helping out in situations that they didn't necessarily intend to, but it's for the good of all accidentally. But I'm curious, how do you maintain the things that make people like series like Firefly or Dark Matter, or I saw somewhere someone comparing this to The Expanse. How do you maintain that with and still make it a fresh new story?
I have no idea. I'm making this up as I go.
Damn it. I tried to get his secrets, everybody.
I mean, other people have compared it to Dark Matter and also I think to Killjoys. I haven't seen either of them, more through lack of time than anything else. But I know as a matter of interest, I know the showrunner of Dark Matter actually likes it because he posts a review of like a thing on Twitter saying how much he enjoyed Dark Run. So that was cool. But yeah, in terms of trying to keep it fresh and unique, and suppose I think it's a very difficult thing or a very dangerous thing to go, oh, here are the ideas. Now I need a way to make it my own, because I think that's artificial and forced. I guess you probably just got to write what you want to write and then hope that it's different enough. I think one of the things that I've used in the Kaiko series is, there's, unlike, for example, Firefly, they've got faster than light travel. They use something called an Asubia drive, which is, there is some, I know NASA are looking into it. It's like a sort of a space time compression thing. So you don't break the rules of physics by actually going faster than light, because you subjectively are not going faster than light. You're bending space-time so that it compresses ahead of you and elongates behind you. So you move through it without actually the bit where you are moving faster than light. And like, yeah, NASA are doing stuff very, very early stages of that going, I wonder if this is possible. So I figured, well, that's, if NASA are looking into it, that's realistic enough for me to use and not feel like I'm just waving my hands and going, ba-dam, hyperspace. So we got that. But the thing I like about that is that means that people can move faster than light, but radio signals still can't move faster than light, which means that people move faster than radio signals over long distances, which essentially makes the entire galaxy into a giant sort of Wild West frontier thing again, because you can travel faster than the wanted poster for you. I really, because other people were going, well, you can have faster than light communication with quantum entanglement. I was like, yeah, but I don't want it. This is actually much more interesting, where you've got the entire galaxy and you can travel. And if you're fast enough, you can outrun your own bad news. I really like that dynamic. And that's something that I haven't seen any. I mean, there probably is that somewhere else, but I haven't seen it anywhere else. And I really like that idea. It really sort of changed the dynamic from the other stuff I've seen, where, you know, someone flashes up on a news screen and they're talking to you from across the galaxy, and then Lord Vader chokes someone or something.
I hadn't really thought of things like that. And it, as you say, it does make it more of a Wild West feel. Was that something that you were specifically going for when you first started the series?
Not Wild West as such, I guess. That's more kind of just a handy tool, I suppose, to get people to envisage what I'm going for. But that was the thing of, like, it really makes the whole place a frontier, I suppose, is what I'm getting at. And so the communication is very limited or very slow compared to how fast people can move. That's what I was going for, I suppose.
Gotcha. I see. What has been the biggest challenge of writing a third book in a series? Is this supposed to be a trilogy, and is this the final book, or are you hoping to write more? How's that going?
It's supposed to be a quintology. The plan is for five. Whether or not I get to five depends very much on how well the second and the third sell.
Right. So go buy the book, everybody.
Yeah, please. You know, I'm really liking this whole being an author thing. It's amazing. So if I can continue that, that would be brilliant. The biggest challenge. That's a really hard one to answer, actually. I honestly don't know. I haven't really got a funny or a clever or particularly insightful answer for that. I actually don't know.
So why don't you tell us where everybody can find you and where they can buy the books so that we can have a completed series?
Yeah. Okay. Well, my personal website is mikebrooks.co.uk. I'm on Twitter at mikebrooks668, neighbor of the beast. I got that from the plan, apparently the planned sequel to Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. They were going to call it 668 Neighbor of the Beast, but they never wrote it, sadly. Yeah. And when you call Mike Brooks, there's quite a few Mike Brookses on Twitter already. So it's like, well, I can either be Mike Brooks 12 or something, or I can be an actual number. So it's like, yeah, Mike Brooks 668. That works.
An actual number, which is good, because, I tend to avoid people who have numbers in their names just because half the time they're bot. But now we know Mike Brooks 668 is not a bot. He is just the neighbor of the beast.
That's actually me. Yeah. So Twitter and my own website. And I've launched a Patreon now, because I'm trying to do some more like short stories and stuff.
Awesome.
So I'm on Patreon, Mike Brooks. You can find me there. Yeah. Oh, and just for the hell of it, I'll plug. I've got a band. We're called Interplanetary Trash Talk.
Ah, love it. And of course, everything you do is very science fictional punk, right?
Actually, to be fair, it's more like sort of political stuff, but we've got some of the song titles are stupid. We've got a song called We Break for Nobody, which is from the bumper sticker of Spaceball 1.
Nice.
And we've got a song called Can't Stop the Signal. I don't need to tell you where that's from. We also had a song called Look Behind You, a Three-Headed Monkey, from, but we don't play that one anymore.
That's fantastic. And where can we find your books? In all the places that books are sold?
The third one, unfortunately, is only coming out in book format in America, which is sucks a bit for over here. But so far as I'm aware, you know, your basic Barnes and Noble or whatever it is you guys have over there, the main book retailers, they're on Amazon and Book Depository and all that stuff.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike, for coming on the show and telling us about Dark Deeds.
Thank you very much for having me.
It was my pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on Signal Boost today. Go check out Mike and his work, and go buy the entire Kaiko series right now. We'll be right back. Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show. I'm Jen, and today on Signal Boost, we have S.A. Chakraborty, author of the brand new novel, City of Brass. Welcome to the show, Shannon.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So first off, tell us about yourself and give us the basics on City of Brass.
Well, as you just introduced me, I'm S.A. Chakraborty, a historical fantasy writer from New York City. City of Brass is my debut. I originally did not start out writing fantasy. I'm a big history buff. I wanted to do the whole graduate route in Middle Eastern history. So I started this project 2 years ago. That was basically just historical fan fiction of me writing about the worlds and the people and the events that I loved. And it turned into a book. I shopped it around writers' groups more for fun. It was a hobby, something I enjoyed. And now it debuts in a week from Harper Voyager. So it's fantastic. The book itself is in a planned trilogy called the David Bod Trilogy. It takes place in the 18th century Middle East and with an Egyptian con artist named Nahri. She's got a couple of strange skills, but doesn't think much of them until one of her schemes goes wrong and she conjures a warrior who ends up taking her back to the City of Brass, Davabad, a title in which she gets into all sorts of political schemes that she's entirely unprepared for.
Sounds like a ton of fun, and I'm very excited about it. Clearly, you're coming at us from the perspective of a historian. So could you tell us more about 18th century Cairo? What was it like kind of socially and politically that made it the perfect spot to set your story?
Well, I can start out. I'll talk about it a little bit, but I will say I pulled more from the medieval world to set the actual story. But when I started it in Cairo in the 18th century, it was for a couple of reasons. I had studied abroad in Egypt when I was in college, and I had graduate professors there who would take us to some of the settings that ended up coming into the book. And she had so many opinions on everything about the Ottomans, about the Turks, about the French. It was just, you know, great things here. And this world started coming into focus in my mind when we would go on these sites, when we would see of the dead, when we would go to some of the hospital complexes that are mentioned in the second book. So really, just this idea, this lived world that was in my head. Another thing I wanted to study sort of throughout the trilogy was the idea of medicine and healing. And in the 18th century, there would be a lot of new changes in this field of study. And the third reason in the 18th century was because a lot of the book do occupation. And while it's not specifically European occupation, it goes to more of the world of the story. For me, starting at that was sort of a thematic point of, you know, this is when Napoleon has conquered Egypt and things are about to look very different for this country.
That's really interesting. So tell me about medieval Davabad.
So Davabad started, the book started basically as historical fan fiction project. I was studying the medieval Islamic world, which is sort of a strange way to say we get to the high point really from like the 8th century to about the 15th. And my focus in general was on the Abbasids, which were the dynasty that controlled Baghdad really through the 8th through the 7th century, the Indian Ocean trading world. So when I started thinking about this city, I wanted to envision a place that pulled in tales and cultural notes from all of these worlds. So I started looking at the idea of jinn. Sort of contrary to what we think in the West, jinn are very prevalent idea. And we believe that they're creatures just like us. They're soul beings created from smoke. And they live, from smokeless fire. And they live more or less alongside us. They have very long lives, and they're just sort of silent witnesses to humanity. And as a history lover, I loved this because that would make them sort of silent witnesses all of the stuff that went down. I thought when I was sitting, again, when it was just a world-building project, well, what would they have seen? Would they have seen, you know, the famous libraries of Baghdad? Would they have seen vigor and all, you know, the glories of ancient Mesopotamia? And might they have taken some of those ideas and, you know, they could have battled with weapons from ancient Persia? You know, they would have been using the medical history techniques I loved, but be using it to treat curses instead of colds. Bring in all these ideas and this history that I really loved, add magic and just combine it into this one world. So that's setting started that way, was sort of me just being like, I like this, and oh, it's interesting that I read about in 15th century Iran how they used wind towers, getting added to this giant book. It really started out that way.
That sounds awesome. So tell me about your protagonist, about it, Nahri.
Oh, Nahri is a con artist. I mean, full through criminal from Egypt. She has, like most good citizens, has a serious orphan background. But she was raised in Egypt, sort of on the streets, taking care of, and she's had these strange abilities. She can heal. She can understand most languages. But growing up on the streets of 18th Cairo, you would have to use those things to survive, not necessarily to thrive or really enjoy your life. So I have the idea that she's, you know, scheming and using these abilities to get by. Wanted to do other things, probably had a genuine interest in medicine and in doing what she can with that. And she's, so when she, one of her schemes goes wrong, and I don't want to completely spoil the book, but she calls upon an actual djinn, the, one of the creatures that she says she believes. Find out a lot of this is real. Her actual position is a lot more dangerous than she could have ever expected, and she's being brought to this world really regardless of what she thinks, supposedly for her own safety. But that sort of becomes a theme in the book, of people sort of thinking, okay, this is what's best for you, when not necessarily checked in about what she thinks is best for herself and how you get through with something like that. And it's really just bringing in a character like this and depositing her into this very elaborate court system of political intrigue. And she's in a position that means things she doesn't quite understand. And she just has to figure it out very quickly.
Awesome. So I'm a huge fan of time travel portal stories. They're just so fun, sticking people, you know, sort of fish out of water, but with a few advantages.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of wanted to go with this. I figured if they were basing this world off what they had seen in the human world and with magic, it would seem almost a few centuries behind. That, you know, the concept of guns and some of the new technologies wouldn't have made it there quite yet.
Exactly. Awesome. So I hear that this story was a hashtag DV Pit success. Can you tell our listeners what DV Pit is and just kind of about that process and how that happened?
Sure. Well, DV Pit is a Twitter pitching event, and I'm somewhat okay with social media, but I'm not the savviest, so I'll try to explain. But it's basically, you know, it was like a 12-hour period where you came up with pitches for your story, 140 characters of, you know, this is this and this is this. And DV Pit was highlighted to select marginalized voices. And this event, actually, I think it's been done three more times. The one in which City of France got picked up was the first. And I was just querying sort of the old-fashioned way I had been for a couple months, you know, going through the slush. And it was, you know, it was working out for me, but there were some agents that weren't open that were going to be participating in DV Pit. And I basically looked up what a Twitter pitch contest meant a couple of months before, was still a little confused. But I came up with a pitch. You know, I wanted to, part of the reason, a major part of the reason I actually looked to publish this was because I'm Muslim myself, and, you know, the project meant a lot to me in terms of our history and sort of characters in our world, and I thought, why not try this event? It got quite a few likes and retweets and all the other techno bubble, but ended up hooking me up with my agent, who had otherwise been closed at the time, so it was just fantastic, and we went through and did the whole submission process after a couple months, and it went to auction, and now I'm here. So
that's amazing, and congratulations on it.
Thank you.
It's getting a lot of good buzz, and it sounds wonderful. So I'm excited to get to read it. So why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can pick up a copy of City of Brass?
Sure. Well, the book comes out next week. It comes out on November 14th, and it will be in most booksellers, I imagine. But if you want to sort of follow me and my progress, despite my limited understanding of technology, I'm usually at Twitter most often. I talk a lot about Islamic art and politics and some of those topics. And you can find me at Esh Chakram, which is S-C-H-A-K-R-A-B. And my Twitter at symbol, I guess. But my website also is www.sachakraborty, which is chakraporty.com. And on there, I have all sorts of links to where you can buy the book, where you can find out a little bit more about it. We actually have the first three chapters available to download on InstaFreebie. And if you're a history buff like me, I have a read list, I think about 50 titles long, possibly longer, about the history of some of this world. And that's what I talk about online a lot. So if any of that sounds interesting, you can check that out as well. And then, you know, hopefully buy the book.
Awesome. So this is going to be a trilogy, the David Bed trilogy. So do we know when the second book is coming out too?
Not yet. Hopefully next year. We'll see. Everything awesome. Happened a little quickly. We sold it quickly. And we're working on it now in spurts between me taking care of my four-year-old and general life. But it's going well. I'm have a draft done, and I'm working with my agent and my editor now, and I'm really enjoying the process. Probably enjoying the process because I'm like, oh, I'd like to research about this.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Shannon.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And thank you, listeners, for listening to the Signal Boost. Make sure that you go check out S.A. Chakraborty and buy City of Breath.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Cronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.